Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to part two of our season post-mortem.
And yes, we know the games aren't finished yet, but essentially the season is. So, tonight, Michael, we're going to have questions for Jake and Drew. Drew gets to talk about how these guys actually work in the locker room. Are you thinking anything's going to be, like, wacky coming out of that?
I'm just hoping that Drew doesn't share with us, the stories when the towels are off. I like to know everything inside and out, for the most part, about my Hornets, soon-to-be Pelicans players, but I hope he doesn't divulge anything that would make me feel like a lesser man.
Right. And, of course, Jake is going to come on to talk about the playbook changes that we saw over as the year went on. We're, of course, going to ask him why our defense sucks so bad. I'm sure he's got all the answers, because obviously they're clear and easy to figure out, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, because when you said Hornets playbook, all I thought about was Jim Mora going, playbook? Playbook? The Hornets actually have a playbook? I haven't seen anything, this season. I mean, if this team has a playbook, what would they look like, without one? So I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say about some of the schemes that we try to do offensively and defensively, because this team is just tough to watch at times.
Yeah, it is. All right, so let's get Jake on. And now we're joined by Jake Madison, our resident expert at the Hornets playbook as they've executed all year. Jake, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So basically we wanted to bring you on to talk about the Hornets playbook, how it's changed over the year, and then get a little idea of, obviously, the playbook, both offensive and defense, didn't work that well. So what kind of players should the Hornets be looking at to be able to slot into positions that maybe aren't working out as well as we hoped? So first off, I mean, a lot of people complain about the Hornets' offense. I've actually seen it develop over the year. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's moved on from Monty Williams' first year with Chris Paul and David West, when it was pick and roll and pick and pop after pick and roll and pick and pop. And especially this year, you saw it evolve as the season went on. I actually think a big deal made about the type of players he has and the bigs in particular, and how it's actually allowed Monty to open up the playbook a little more. He's got a more like diversified set of skill players, especially with his big men, that's really allowed him to let that offense open up, breathe some more, and throw in some creative sets.
So the general question, like, when you look at this team, just PERs, you take the most simple efficiency metric there is PER for offense. The front court grades beautifully. Lopez, Anderson, Anthony Davis, Jason Smith, all of them are great players. And the backcourt are awful. I mean, average at best. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I'd say it is. I think sometimes it's a bit of a shame for some of the backcourt players when they are doing a lot of work to maybe get those looks open for the big men. But, I mean, overall, you're not going to win a title with Vasquez as your starting point guard. You know, it really just comes down to that. He's kind of a boom or bust player for, you know, whatever he gives you, that's a tremendous play. He's making a turnover on the other end, you know, on the next series. Same thing with Gordon, especially after that game tonight against Dallas when he had, like, three straight turnovers to start the game. And, I mean, that can kill you.
So, I mean, we've seen and heard Monty say that, you know, he doesn't think Gordon is back fully this year and that hopefully next year he would be, and you'd see a lot more offense running through Gordon. Specifically when they have tried to run offense through Gordon, what seems to be, you know, the set plays that they go with, and what works well and what doesn't work so well?
With Gordon, you definitely see a lot of pick and rolls. He's pretty good at that. At times, he also gives you that boom or bust aspect with it too, because he tries to kind of, if they trap him, split it. And at times he does it so well where he cuts right between the two defenders, gives you sort of like a mini fast break almost in the half court a little bit. And then it allows for open looks, kickouts where the offense is rolling through him and he might be dishing out assists. And I think as the season went on, you saw him looking for teammates a little bit more in certain games. So when it does work well, it really does open up the offense, creates easier looks for everyone else. But when he's out there and it looks like he's not trying, or he does that play against Utah where he sort of dribbles into Robin Lopez and two defenders and loses the ball, obviously nothing's going to get going with that whatsoever, and frankly he does that just too much.
Will that be improved having different players on the court next to him?
I think so. I think getting Jason Smith back would help a little bit. I think I'm not a big Lopez fan personally, and I don't really like using him on the pick and roll, as they don't run him to the basket too quickly, so it allows his defender to sort of sag off and just camp an extra man in the paint, which is going to sort of eliminate all effective drives in a way. And then I think they just need another shooter on the court with him. When it's him out there, unless he's playing with Vasquez or, you know, Rhino on the team, there's not many people to space the court and allows the defenses to sort of clog the lane against him.
So, I mean, I think ideally, with the way the NBA is going, Anthony Davis will be able to play the center position full time. Who knows? Maybe within another year or two if he puts on some weight. But if he doesn't, I mean, what do you think would be bigger to the offensive spacing? To remove Lopez from the court and have like an AD Rhino combo at the 4 and 5? Or do you think that the Hornets, if they just get a small forward who's a threat from the perimeter, they could still roll out with Davis in a traditional center at the 5?
I think the most important thing would be someone at the small forward. You know, I'd be even happy with a 3-and-D kind of guy, someone who when you space the court well, it's going to help your ball movement. It almost adds like a sixth man at times onto the court for you, where you just catch these defenses rotating. It's going to create the best looks possible for you, give you the highest percentages. And I think at times the Hornets' offense just gets too compressed where, you know, Vasquez has improved his three-point shooting ability, but, you know, he's not great at it. Brian Roberts can be hit or miss sometimes. And then, you know, if Anderson's off, we've seen him a couple games this year just be ice cold from deep, and it kills your floor spacing with that. So I think that would be important. I think it also helps where it's going to allow more drives into the lane by if you keep Lopez, you know, a little bit further away from that or in another type of player, they don't clog the lane as much. It allows for more drives by Gordon and the other guards, which is going to create more kickouts and open threes, and you see how it all works together.
So let me tell you a general fantasy I have about this team, and not the one that would shame me. The one where the Hornets basically, they have Ryan Anderson. They do a Orlando-style offense where Anthony Davis rolls around in the middle, tries to grab rebounds, runs pick and rolls, and then they just surround him with shooters. This year, the Hornets, I think if I remember right, 50% of the Hornets' three attempts while Ryan were coming from Ryan Anderson when he's on the floor. And in Orlando, it was 33%. If they could get another guy in there who would allow Ryan Anderson to be a little bit less of a necessary threat where they can't focus on him so much, is that a possible offense, or do you think that Anthony Davis can't handle that kind of load in the middle?
I don't know if he can handle it maybe next season, but I mean, long-term, absolutely. What that also does is if you've got some shooters on the perimeter, it's pulling defenders away from being underneath the basket, which is going to, you know, allow him some more room to operate and grab some of these boards. It's tough for him when he's got, you know, three opponents underneath there, and it's him and Lopez struggling to get boards or various things like that. So, I mean, I think it could absolutely work. I think it might take him some time for that to really click with the team, so maybe you're looking at two or three seasons down the line, but I definitely think that would be a fun offense to watch.
Okay, so we've sat here for our first couple minutes with you and talked on and on about all the problems on the offensive end, but this team is middle of the pack in offensive rating, you know, decent in a lot of offensive categories, definitely a lot better than they were last year. Meanwhile, the defense is just absolutely horrible. I guess, I mean, you've done several pieces on it this year. Take us through overall what Monty's philosophy is this year, and then give me a percentage on, you know, how much you blame for this defense on his philosophy versus the players that he was given.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely can see the regression. Basically, the offensive philosophy is throw everyone in the paint. Just collapse and put everyone in there. I mean, it's shocking how many times you'll see four or even five guys standing right underneath the basket as the opponent's got three fairly good shooters lined up on the perimeter. The best example when this didn't work probably was that Knicks game around the middle of the year, where they were just raining three-pointers down. It was Melo sort of trying to post up, and then three or four people would collapse, and that's just going to kill your defensive rotations when he kicks it out. And you saw the Hornets chasing the ball on the perimeter a lot this year, usually being just a step behind. Part of that's due to team speed, but at the same time, I don't like that defensive strategy always. I think it works against certain teams, but against other teams that are strong outside shooting teams, like, say, the Warriors and the Knicks, you're going to absolutely get burned because they're just too good to keep missing those. And at a certain point, you'd rather just not be praying for them to go ice cold from behind the three-point line. I do think a lot of that is kind of based off of the players he's been given. But at a certain point, if you're in the middle of a game and you're Monty Williams and you see your team just getting torched from behind the arc, don't you have to make a change to at least do something that might slow him down? And I saw almost none of that this year, and that's my biggest concern. Was clearly this was his defensive strategy. He said as much, the players have said as much, but there was absolutely like zero willingness to change on his part.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair to Monty, there's not going to be much that you could do to stop Chris Copeland and Pablo Prigioni anyway. So pointing out that one thing.
So, here's the thing that I can even understand following this philosophy if you really are if it's actually helping you stop the other team attack the paint. But in the last study I did of the like where shots are being taken, the Hornets I think were fourth worst at the number of shots being taken at the rim. So at some point, I mean, this is on Monty. When your entire defensive philosophy is collapse in the paint and stop the drive, and they're still getting a lot of shots at the basket, just try something else.
That's my take on it. That's something I've kind of said all year long, both offense and defense, and at least we started to see that offensively. But, I mean, if it's not working, why are you sticking with it?
I mean, just to play the other side of it, whether it's devil's advocate or angel's advocate, still didn't research that yet. But to play the other side of it, I mean, if this is going to be his philosophy when the team gets good, you know, and they obviously bring in new players, don't you want, you know, Davis, Rivers, Ryan Anderson, the guys that you hope are going to be here long term to really know just one system well, even if that means a lot of losses this year? I mean, could that be part of the rationale?
Yeah, and I can understand that to a certain point. You know, this season you kind of work on what's going to be the core going forward, the core of your playbook. But at the same time, I think it helps, especially with Monty as a younger coach, to, like Ryan said, just try something different a time or two, see if it actually works, see if, you know, maybe you will need to make changes going forward. Maybe this isn't the exact same defensive strategy you use, but you use a version of it, and you want to see what these guys are capable of. If you're going to run the same thing over and over again, you know your guys can do that or they can't, but you don't know where sort of their boundaries lie.
Yeah, one of the things that I realized when I was watching one of the tournament games I was watching Syracuse, and that hyper-athletic college defense, their zone defense, and I realized I hadn't seen the Hornets go into a zone for maybe more than a play in months. They don't use it at all.
With a player like Davis, don't you think something like a box in one where he's not shadowing maybe the opponent's best player but is allowed to roam at Kentucky would work phenomenally?
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, because he did try it at the beginning, and honestly, it was a fail. Usually when they went zone, I mean, they got crushed. And I'm just wondering, you know, he's got Anthony Davis, who's athletic, Aminu's athletic. There's not been anybody else on this team who you can put at the top of the zone and really have them cover any ground. So, I mean, this is where I just keep coming back to is we really, really have a serious situation on our foot speed that I don't think we can get past no matter what system they put in place. Last year, the Hornets did not run this kind of collapse in the paint defense quite as much. So the thing I'm most interested to see is if we get different athletic players next year, are we going to see more of this kind of defense, or did Mike Malone take a more involved defense with him when he left and went to Golden State?
I mean, that definitely hurt. That was such an important person to have on the bench and an assistant coach, especially with a young head coach in Monty Williams. But I think this is sort of the trend with it. Zach Lowe on Grantland wrote a really good piece. I think they were calling it the 2.9 defense, where you basically want players camping in the lane 2.9 seconds and jumping out right before they get that defensive 3 seconds. And it's mainly to take away the higher efficiency shots at the rim, but I think you can sort of see Monty values length and height, especially, you know, I think with his insistence on keeping Lopez out there so often. But so it leads me to believe that this is going to be the sort of thing he's going to want to run. And I mean, once Davis puts on a little bit more muscle, that's certainly going to help.
So everything's in consideration now. You talked about the offense. You talked about the defense. Let's just say that, you know, the big part of the core right now is Gordon, Anderson, and Anthony Davis. Fill out for me those other two spots on the roster. And, you know, LeBron James obviously isn't available. So would you be targeting, if you had to pick a guy who was great in one area but deficient in the other, would you be targeting more defensive-minded players or offensive? Kind of take me through the thinking that you would have after watching this team as far as what you would do this summer.
I mean, I think you have to focus on the defense at that point. As Ryan was saying, there's a huge issue here. It's sort of pick your poison. So point guard or small forward, which is sort of where I think they're going to be looking. And whichever one you do, you're still got a glaring hole with the other one, and you're going to need the team to be able to sort of cover that up. So I'd love a guy, like I said, a 3-and-D small forward. You know, if you get me, like, who did I pick in the summer? Tony Allen would be, you know, an ideal type of player. How many times have you seen the Hornets just get burned by you know, the opponent's best perimeter player, but at the same point, getting some more foot speed over at point guard would be so important just to be able to stay in front of these guys that keep driving to the rim and blowing past them. Especially also, you know, you got to factor in if they're going to be competing. You're playing against the likes of Russell Westbrook, James Harden, these type of players who can get to the rim from the perimeter, and you need someone or, you know, or another system that can really stop that.
So let me make this question even a little harder for you. So the Hornets can basically address, in my opinion, two positions easily this offseason. They have a high draft pick. So they're going to be able to grab somebody there. And then they have a boatload of cap space to go after one player, at least with a big, big contract. The draft pick isn't going to be, though, you're not going to have a guy come in, especially in this draft, and make like a huge impact on the team. So really, for next season, without getting other teams to help you with trades, there's only one thing only one position you're going to be able to significantly upgrade with veteran help. You got to pick point guard or small forward, and you have Vasquez and Aminu you could bring back. Who is more important to you to replace? You could even bring them back and have them help, but, you know, upgrade, you got to have more minutes from somebody else.
That's a tough one because I've really gone back and forth all season long on which of those two positions I want to address, and it changes weekly, daily sometimes. But I think I finally settled on point guard. It is, like I said earlier, Vasquez has been great and his numbers look good, but when you really watch him play, his defensive liability is just brutal. Remember that Toronto game that went to overtime where they just went at Vasquez and Lowry just, you know, rolled him over essentially. And there's too many good point guards in the league right now, or people that are effective, and we need someone in that slot who's going to at least make them work harder on defense and who's going to be able to slow them down is all I'm really asking for when they're playing defense.
Yeah, I agree. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, you won't get any disagreement from me here. I guess my last question is just, you know, wondering – with Gordon, I mean, we talk about Monty really valuing length, about, you know, that being an issue, especially with the Hornets rotating and helping as much as they do. I mean, we've seen times where Gordon has had to rotate down onto a big man, and, you know, just being he's already an undersized shooting guard, he just offers absolutely no resistance when he has to do that. I mean, forget about all the issues with the Hart being in Phoenix, the contract, you know, all of those things, the injury history. Just from a player profile standpoint, I mean, is Eric Gordon the type of player that Monty would ideally want in his defensive system?
It's a good question, and I don't know if I can answer that fully well, just because I've only really watched him since he's been here more or less this season in New Orleans after his only 9 games played last year, and it's tough to really get a feel for him defensively just because of the injuries and things like that, and I have no idea when he's fully healthy what he would really bring to the table on that side of the ball. I mean, he's fast. He can steal the ball. He's got decent hands, but I think – like I said, I couldn't really tell you. I think he could fit in. He's got enough speed to be able to close out, I think, when he gets some help on the rotations. But overall, I can't really give you an answer on that one, topping out.
That's all right. I mean, there are no answers to any Eric Gordon questions, so that's only fitting.
Just shrug whenever you hear his name, and you pretty much got it. I mean, honestly, in games that the Hornets seem successful, he's playing point.
Yeah.
Which opens like a whole nother realm of issues and possibilities. Should you be positive?
I get, yeah. If you want to be positive, I mean, sure.
All right. So, Jake, thanks very much for coming on.
Not a problem. And, thanks for having me on.
And when we bring in some of these new players over the summer, we'll definitely have you come on and say, you know, what you think is going to happen with them joining the crew. And hopefully we'll have some guys who can both collapse into the paint and have arms long enough they can guard a three-point shooter at the same time.
Oh,
sounds good.
Getting greedy, Ryan. All right. Thanks for going on, Jake.
All right, and now we are joined by no less than Drew Smith, who many of you don't know this. All those awesome pictures you see on our website, or at least a good percentage of them, are taken by Drew at the games. He is our resident media expert, and he also spends a lot of time hanging around the players in the locker room after the game and before the games. He gets asked some questions, so he gets a lot of exposure to them. Drew, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
You've been talking to Aminu off and on all season. Clippers game, just he gets cracked in the head by Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Turns around, first emotion I've ever seen out of Aminu in a game. So what was your take? When you saw that, how did you feel?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that was his first technical foul that he's had since he's been in the NBA.
Really?
Yeah, right after it happened, I went to go research his technical foul record. That was the very first one.
Somehow I should know that.
So even Andrew Ham from the Clipper blog, he tweeted me like, really? No one knew that, but neither was anyone was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, his face is completely, it's always kind of blank. Even like when I saw, looked at his blog, you know, it has some videos of himself. It's still completely, is he like that all the time in the locker room? Does he ever, like, you know,
well,
break out?
On the bench, in, like, the middle of the season for a good 2-3-4-week stretch, he was one of the most hyped guys on the bench. Like, it was, I didn't know where this came from, and then he dripped back down to the blank Aminu. But he would just be, like, just roaring every single play and yelling and screaming. And just, it was the top bench guys were Jason Smith, Lance Thomas, Revis Vasquez as he was on the bench, and then Aminu. So he has emotion, but it's rare. The Chris Paul thing surprising though to me.
So let me ask you this: going all the way back to last June, I remember putting up my first mock draft, and I had Austin Rivers at 10, and immediately people got scared. Chad Ford came out, said that Austin Rivers was hated by teammates at Duke, that he was a possible locker room cancer, that he would be a diva who would, you know, just demand his own shots and rub veterans the wrong way. You've seen Rivers in the locker room. You've seen the way guys have responded to him. You know, is this at all true, or does he seem to fit in with Monty's culture that he's trying to build?
He's very attentive. He pays attention to pretty much everything, a lot of people, whatever people tell him, like Roger Mason and Eric Gordon. Actually, Eric Gordon and Austin Rivers both have, like, their connect. They were, like, the two paired up all the time for a long time in the beginning of the season. They'd always be talking, you know, when they both were injured for a while, they would be just talking injured on the bench and constantly going back and forth. He wants to learn. He doesn't come off as arrogant to me. He's a little cocky, and he'll tell you that, too. He's cocky in a good way. And I think he's right. He's not overly, you know, so, you know, he's not crazy about it. He's not going to go out and say he's the next Kobe or anything. He's going to take the baby steps. He's going to listen. So his personality is good. He's really mature.
So when all of those articles started to roll out saying he was the, worst NBA player ever, did you ever notice him getting down at all?
No.
Or did he just roll with the punches and keep going?
He brushed it off. He just ignored it. He didn't faze him at all. When I talked to him about, you know, people saying that he's not living up to expectations and all this, he just worried about his NBA career and moving a step forward. If it's anything negative, he pretty much, you know, brushes it off and just moves ahead.
So, I mean, a lot of people are talking about moving Eric Gordon, but even if they don't do it this year, you know, you're going to see Anthony Davis at some point. He is going to have to be the leader of this franchise. He's no doubt the cornerstone, going to be the best player. I know the guy just turned 20 years old, and, you know, it's rare that anybody could be a leader of men at 20, but what did you see from him personality-wise, intensity-wise, that possibly gives you hope that in 3, 4, 5 years from now, he could be that on and off the court leader that this franchise is going to need?
It's kind of tough to say what Anthony says. You know, the organization kind of keeps him, actually not the organization, he kind of keeps himself away from media almost as much as possible. Since I've seen him out there in Vegas for Team USA, he keeps his phrases and all of his interviews down to limited words and try not to show his. He kind of almost put on a mean impression when it comes to the interviews. When he gets to the locker room, just, you know, go out and have fun and be a, you know, be a 19, 20 year old.
Right.
But when it comes to things about him being a leader, it's really tough to say since, like, he's one of the guys that I haven't really seen a leader side from, but it's pretty much because I haven't seen an opportunity for him to really put in some, you know, as Kobe might say, put on his big boy pants and go and lead.
So of all the guys in the locker room that you've talked to, and I'm not saying who do you, you know, who you think would be like the nicest, who would you like to hang out with most? Who do you think would be like the best party guy to hang out with?
Lance Thomas.
Really?
Yes, Lance Thomas. That's a favorite locker room guy, hands down. He's the guy I always talk. That's, even if I have nothing to say, I'll go in the locker room and just say what's up to Lance Thomas. He's the funniest guy in the locker room to me right now. Absolutely. He jokes around a lot. He's just all around fun person to be around. Everybody in the locker room. He's one of those guys that's kind of like a glue guy as far as chemistry in the locker room. He keeps everyone, you know, together. He'll keep everyone with a calmer head. He'll, you know, crack jokes in tough times and stuff. He's just all around fun guy to be around.
Huh. And see, you just swayed my. I was thinking that Lou Amundsen might have just come in and taken his job for next year. But knowing that, maybe Lance Thomas is going to remain the
Lou
fifth
Amundsen
big man.
Made one joke that I've heard. It was right after the Nuggets game where Brian Roberts had his huge 18 assist game.
Yeah.
And Grievous Vasquez, he brought his son in. He was doing interviews with a baby in his hand, and he. Lou Amundsen just yelled to Grievous, "Don't forget to bring your suit next game. We don't need you anymore. We got B-Lab."
I think a lot of fans were saying the same thing. So Monty has called Jason Smith the leader of this team. He's obviously the guy that's been on the roster the longest, which is crazy because it's only been 3 years now. But he's the guy who's been here with Monty from the beginning. He knows the system. He's obviously a hustle player. Do you see that teammates really look up to him, respect him? I mean, is he a guy that they rally around in the locker room, or does he keep more to himself or to a select group of players?
Yeah, he's definitely an outgoing guy. He, in a locker room, he doesn't bite his tongue. He's not one of the guys that, you know, holds his tongue while the media is in the locker room, and then once we leave, starts to talk like some other players might do. And he's open. He'll say what's on his mind, but he'll do it. He won't do it. I don't think he'll do it in a way that'll, you know, bring hate to him. You know, he's some other fans might think some other things about him since the Blake Griffin hit. Once I posted his comments after the Blake Griffin hit, I had to disable the comments because the comments were just so crazy. Like he's one of the, you know what I'm saying, like he's one of the most ignorant players in the NBA, and they never even heard of him before.
Right.
But his personality is just, you know, Yeah, definitely leader.
So, question, get you to throw somebody under the bus. Are there any locker room cancers this year? Anyone who you see everybody else seems to be avoiding much? Or not really? Other than Monty when they lose games.
Let me see. Not really. You know, only guy that doesn't, whenever pregame and even postgame, it takes so long for Eric Gordon to get out into the locker room, you know.
it's but then the question is he just avoiding the media? Because I'm not sure if I was Eric Gordon, I'd want to talk to the media.
especially not me, since I'm like always there when he screws up or something. But yeah, I don't think there's anybody in the locker room where they're avoiding, and yeah, they're all like a big brotherhood.
That's good to hear, at least.
Yeah. And then how about? I mean, just how is the overall mood been of late? I mean, I heard it was pretty bad today, but do you sense that players are able to tell that there's going to be a pretty drastic overturn in the roster this year, or guys seem to be fearing their jobs, upset with themselves? I mean, what is this the locker room been like as the season is coming to a close?
It's been very quiet with all of these losses. With every game, every loss is just a funeral in the locker room. It's bad. I wish Aminu would show some more urgency, you know, seeing that he's going to be a free agent this summer, and he's just still blank face, you know, no expression, no worries, like, you know, like his contract is guaranteed or something. But other than that urgency, I think Brian Roberts shows a little bit of, you know, I have to get on my game. Today he talked to me. You know, he knows he's improved throughout this entire season, and, you know, finding passes that he was missing earlier. So if there's anybody that was, you know, aware of their situation, I think it's Brian Roberts.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's got the least amount of years to go to earn his paycheck. And I mean, my last question is really, I mean, the Hornets era is dead on Wednesday. You know, we've had a lot of on-the-record comments about the name change and Pelicans and the logo. What was, you know, maybe the behind-the-scenes reaction or some things you heard from some of the guys as far as how they felt about, you know, Pelicans and, you know, when they saw the logo and, you know, maybe looking forward to the jerseys, anything like that? What was some of the reactions in the locker rooms that we might not have heard?
I talked to Roger Mason. He gave the conventional veteran response as, you know, the name doesn't matter, and, you know, yada, 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 we're going to represent what's on the floor. Didn't sound like a huge fan of the name. And then I guess Darius Miller overheard that because he gave the exact same response. Because I wanted to go talk to him. But Brian Roberts was pretty much open about, man, Pelicans isn't really my thing. You know, he said it's not really don't quote me on this. I have the video up on YouTube. So I'll probably, you know, we can embed that or put a link in the description. He was saying about how Pelicans aren't really vicious and, you know, whatnot. And then I told him neither is a lake.
it sounds like he needs to be educated on the viciousness of Pelicans because they're nasty.
Right.
Yeah, maybe send him picture. See that Pelican versus a pigeon on YouTube.
Yeah, or the ones when he's eating the baby ducklings.
Yeah.
Oof, that was a bad one. All right, Drew, so thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And as new guys come in, we expect to hear updates as to, you know, which guys like are going to take Lance Thomas's crown.
I'll let you know who the cast is too.
All right.
And if you want to hit Andrew up, he's got some of that Dirk Nowitzki hair from when he shaved his beard today. So, going on sale, $500 a pop on eBay.
Dirk Nowitzki, Chris Kanan, and Jason Cole.
Thanks very much.
All right.